Before we get started, a special thank you is in order to our friends over at Stanley Customs. Stanley Customs creates amazing custom sports figurines for all you athletes out there. Right now, our listeners will get 15% off their order, and all interviewees will get 25% off their order simply by going to Stanley_Customs on Instagram and telling them that Globally Ballin sent you. Thank you. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Globally Ballin podcast, a product of the Globally Ballin podcast network. We have a fantastic interview for you today, so sit back and enjoy, and thank you all for joining us one more time. Here's the music. I gotta let you go. Finish the game with a broken hand.
Yeah, finish the game with...
I'm Rio 2016 silver medalist and Asian Games 2018 gold medalist.
Young man, how do you use a celebrity for good? You know, up until that point, most of us as athletes were taught on it, use the celebrity to manipulate, to get a girl, to get famous, to get whatever it is.
We're hours away from kind of the nearest hospital. He ended up losing his leg over.
I don't think a lot of people know the opportunities there are actually to play overseas, especially in the women's category.
Actually broke my neck. I was paralyzed from the waist down, and I was never supposed to walk again, much less be able to play football again.
Had a couple guys get robbed at gunpoint, and one of them was just like, "Jay, get me out."
At the same time, there are some who would still keep their 9-to-5 jobs because the pay for being an athlete isn't enough.
Don't complain when we look like idiots abroad in these big tournaments.
What league or country gave you the best pay contract-wise?
Probably Turkey, my last season.
Okay. Today's interview is with the owner of the East Coast Basketball League, Chris Thomas. If you've learned anything so far from all of these, it seems like one truth when it comes to leagues in the United States is, for a sport at least, when you've learned about a bunch of leagues, it always seems to be that there's still one more league. And the smaller you get, usually those leagues are more localized, mostly because travel is one of the biggest expenses starter and smaller leagues have to deal with. And so this is true if you look at different situations, especially if you look at something like football. So top tier indoor football, you have the Indoor Football League that spans basically the west half of the United States. Then you have the next tier, which is National Arena League, and they're everything east of the Mississippi. Now football and indoor football in the United States doesn't stop there. There are two other leagues worth mentioning, and they're also very important because they add to what I was just saying. They're very localized. You have the Champions Indoor Football that's right down the middle of the country, almost in a straight line, ranging from Nebraska down to Texas. And then you have the American West Football Conference, and they're all up in the west side of the United States, far west and more north. You have three in Washington, one in Idaho. So the smaller these leagues get, the more localized they get. And this is true, like I said, with indoor football, but you can also do the same thing with basketball, which is our topic again this week. We're doing a league in basketball. We are looking at the East Coast Basketball League, a basketball league in the United States, exactly where you guessed, in the East Coast. Currently there's 19 teams spanning from four states, all right in a row: Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. Again, one of the reasons this is, and it'll be mentioned, is that for any smaller league, startup league, smaller league, a league that doesn't bring in as much, the first thing you need to be careful when it comes to spending is travel, because travel can be very, 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 very pricey. So you gotta watch that. But the East Coast Basketball League is a perfect example of how when you get smaller, these leagues get more and more localized. And so we're going to talk with the founder of the East Coast Basketball League, and he's going to give us some insight on how the league came to be and what about it makes it different, what about it makes it strong. And the other very interesting thing I wanted to check on is, what is the hopeful growth of a league like this, because localization is so important to a league, sustaining a league like this because of travel expenses and all this other stuff. Localization is so important. It's a, I think, a great thing to ask, how big do you want to make this league? Now, this league's already 19 teams. If we look at the localized football league examples that we had, you're looking at no more than 6-7 teams. This is 19. Now, basketball and football, obviously very, 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 very different sports. But still, having 19 teams in a localized league spanning four states is a successful league. It's a strong league. It's a big league comparatively. And so it's a great thing to consider is how big do you want that league to go? Not only how big, but how far do you want it to stretch? These are thoughts that you, if you're considering starting a team in a league like this, or even starting a league yourself, this is a really important question you need to think about, because travel costs are the death of starter leagues. And so you really, really, really need to consider that. And that's why you get a league like the ABA that stretches all across the United States, but there's no rule about having to play teams in the league. So, you know, the team in Akron doesn't need to go play the team in Hawaii ever. There's no rule about it. In fact, the team in Akron never has to leave Ohio if they don't want to. If there's even one other team there, they can just keep playing them. But if you're going to have those rules about playing everybody in the league, you need to be careful about how far away they are. These are all things you need to consider. So, like I said, we will be looking at the East Coast Basketball League with its founder, Chris Thomas. The league was broken off of the Tobacco Road Basketball League. Again, a league you probably have never heard of. This is the kind of thing that you get into when you look at sports in the United States. There are so many leagues that you've never heard of. That doesn't mean they're professional leagues, but they are established leagues that you've never heard of. And there's a lot of them. And so it branched off the Tobacco Road Basketball League. This league ceased in 2016 and was around for about five-ish years. At its height, this league had teams playing from Auburn to Texas to Chapel Hill, Charlotte, Georgia. Just running through some of these teams. You have, Raleigh, Savannah, or South Carolina, Wilmington. So it was regional, but those are distances spanning farther than what the East Coast Basketball League does. So enjoy the interview, and we're going to hear more about that and see what this is all about. Why did the East Coast Basketball League happen? What happened to the Tobacco Road Basketball League? What was the point of forming this new league? Hopefully hearing why this league was formed might help you. Maybe if you're a league founder or considering, aspiring, this might be a question that you're going to have to think about. And so this conversation does speak to players. So if you're a basketball player, you're going to enjoy this one. But it also really talks to those of you looking to get something started as far as leagues and opportunities for any sport in the United States. So enjoy our interview with Chris Thomas.
Hey everybody, this episode is brought to you by an additional sponsor. We are now also brought to you by Creating Young Minds. Creating Young Minds is a nonprofit out of Lewisville, Texas, right outside of Dallas. You may remember we've had an episode in the past with the founders of Creating Young Minds, Dr. Shira Ackerman and Coach Mathis Crowder. Creating Young Minds strives to help young men achieve success in their life where they may not have otherwise achieved that success. One way they do this is through their new basketball team. The Lewisville Yellow Jackets, affiliated with Creating Young Minds, play in TBL, the basketball league. And through a combination of their nonprofit as well as their basketball team, Creating Young Minds and the Lewisville Yellow Jackets are doing their best to bring the European model of basketball to the United States. That is Creating Young Minds. You can find them on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, basically everywhere. Find Creating Young Minds, check them out, see what they're all about. And when the TBL league rolls around once again, keep an eye out for the Lewisville Yellow Jackets. Thank you.
So we might as well get started right away then. What, to start off, just to introduce, say who you are and what your role is.
Okay, I'm Chris Thomas. I'm the owner of the Primetime Players minor league basketball team, and I'm also the owner and the founder of the East Coast Basketball League.
The East Coast Basketball League, is that considered, what's that considered, semi-pro?
Yeah, it's semi-pro, but I don't like the word semi-pro because, I mean, I don't want to go to a semi-doctor, so we've always gone by minor league. The way we try to represent ourselves.
Okay, so consider it a minor league. What area does it represent?
We start off at our bottom. The bottom is of Georgia, and we go all the way up to Virginia, and we have both the Carolinas in between, teams in each one of those.
And how many teams are there?
We have 19 teams this year.
And how long about has the league been around?
This is our sixth season.
Okay, so as far as opportunities that players find for this league, what does it look like? Are these players getting paid? Does it depend on the team, or is it all amateur in the sense that they're not getting paid for their play?
To be honest, across the board, it's different. You have some teams that do like a stipend off of the ticket sales, and then we have some teams that, you know, it's purely exposure, and then we have some teams, you know, that use it as, you know, straight amateur. But we try to refrain from playing players in our league. Pretty much what we try to do with most of the teams is do our best to give them every single opportunity they can by giving them, they all get video, they all get stats. There's a video for every game has to be videotaped. Every game is posted within 48 hours. Every team has to have stats put up within 48 hours. We have a functioning website. We have individual team functioning website. And, you know, we do everything we can to make sure everybody on the outside is looking and seeing our league and seeing our players and making sure they get an exposure where they get an opportunity to probably play at that next level.
What led to the creation of this league in the first place? What did you see that needed to be fulfilled?
Well, originally I had been in another minor league. That was in the Tobacco Road Basketball League. I was one of the four original members in that league. And when I started in that league, it was like there was a bunch of teams that didn't have any. The way they did the league, instead of holding teams accountable for by not doing league rules that we had, if somebody didn't, you know, went against the grain and didn't turn in stats or didn't videotape the game or, you know, or just anything you can think of that were in our rules that they didn't follow, we didn't do anything but just sweep it up under the rug. And it was like, oh, it's okay, don't worry about it. And I was more or less, I felt like teams need to be held accountable. And you can't just pick up teams, any team in the world, just to, if they call you, put them in your league. Because, I mean, that's more rec league than it is anything else. So at one point, that league decided they wanted to try to go to a year-round flex schedule where they would start playing in November and then play all the way until the following June. And so we voted. We had 14 teams, and we voted, and the owner of the league had lost the vote 9-4 with one non-vote. And when he lost the vote, the next day he sent the league an email and said that we were no longer going to have a board and we were no longer going to vote on anything, that they were going to make all the rules for the league moving forward. So at that point, I sent an email out to the teams that I thought were in good standing and asked them would they be interested in going with me. And I started the East Coast Basketball League, and we had six teams that left with me, and we started that in 2014.
When you guys decided to leave, what kept you from joining anything that was already existing as far as basketball leagues?
Because I knew exactly what I wanted to try to do. When, I mean, I've always been a part of, you know, like a touring team where we'd go play college teams, or we try to play teams from the ABA, or we might play a team from the Carolina Basketball League or something. And everywhere I went to, it was just like, you never knew if you were going to have the game, or it was worse than going to a YMCA rec league game. And so at that point, I decided if I was going to move forward and do it. And then I had teams that believed in me that joined that league, the TRBL, because of me. So when they did that, I just felt like the best possible thing for me to do was to try to create my own league and put those, the people that I brought with me, I let them help me run the league, help me come up with the rules, help me come up with the plans of what we wanted to do. That way we could be successful. And when I did that, they all felt like they're part of the league instead of somebody that's just in the league with somebody dictating what we're going to do and we just show up and play. And I just don't like that. I felt like if we're going to be in it together, then we're going to be in it together where they're going to help me run the league and you know, because if you have them and everybody feels like they're involved, you know, it's going to be a whole lot stronger than if you're just somebody that feels like you have no power at all and you're just in this league and have no power whatsoever, no say in anything.
So I assume that is part of the reason why you would consider yourself better run than something like the ABA. Is that accurate or not?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, and then what specifically, if you had to point something out between you and the ABA that makes you different and more, you know, better run than them?
I feel like that we have more of a structure. We have a structured league schedule. Like, I make the league schedule, and we do a balanced league schedule where all teams are, when we get to the playoffs, our teams, you know, it's based on your in-conference record, and we have a schedule with scheduled playoffs. With the ABA, you don't have that. If I'm an owner, I can schedule whoever I want to play. And you call, you know, you make your own schedules. The league doesn't make the schedule. If you miss a game in that league, if you miss a game, it's just, oh, okay, no problem. In our league, if you miss a game in our league, it's the end of your season. We don't play that missing games or having teams show up and there's not a game. We don't have that. That's unacceptable. And, you know, in that league, I know they let a lot of that go. And then teams might play. You might have one team that plays 3 or 4 games a year, and that's all they play. And you never hear nothing else from them. And it's just hard. Like, been here in the Carolinas, there's no ABA teams. We have one team that's here in the Carolinas, and they have teams that cancel on them left and right. And what we've done the last 3 years is every chance we can, she'll call us and say, hey, this team canceled on me again. Could y'all play? And we try to send teams down there. We've already done that twice this year. And last year, I think we did it 5 times for them. And I mean,
wow.
It's just a bad situation for some of the owners. But now if you're like the Jacksonville area with the teams in the Florida or the teams that are up like upper state, New York and Maryland and stuff like that, where you have a bigger following, now those teams are exceptional teams. But the teams that are in between that are trying, they don't have somebody, I feel like, that's willing to help them out. In our league, you know, I expect every owner to try to help each other out. When I go on the road, if you need some help or something's going on with your organization and you might have somebody out and you need a little bit of help, I want to be there to be able to help you. And that's the way our league team's mentality is, you know, we're all in this together to have a great league. And if one team's not doing successful or not doing what they're supposed to do, then it looks like our whole league isn't doing that. So we have a board representation for the North and for the South, and we have a communications director, and we make sure we stay in touch with officials for the league. We're in touch with the owners in our league, and we're making sure at all times that we're staying up on these teams. We don't just have no communication from week to week and then there's a game. You know, we're on these teams leading up to every single game. We're on the officials leading up to every single game to make sure everybody's on the same page, everybody's ready to play each weekend that we do have games.
Where do you see, or how do you see the future of the league?
Well, originally I saw the future of the league just being a 16-team league is all I wanted to eventually be, and just be from Georgia to Virginia. And I mean, we've had other leagues that have folded, or we have other leagues that are in existence now that have contacted us trying to get us to take over their league or let them join our league as an umbrella league or something like that. But to me, I just don't want to get out of our footprint of Virginia to Georgia. I mean, I might would go to West Virginia and we might go with Tennessee, but to me, my biggest thing is I don't want to put a ceiling on the number of teams we would have for our league, because the only thing is with us is that if you're a qualified team and your organization is ran professionally, then we would be interested in having you play with us, and I can find a way to make that work. If you're a team that's existing in our league and you're not doing what you're supposed to do as a professional team, and you're not running your organization the way you're supposed to be either, we don't have any problem with releasing you from our league either. We've done that many a times in the last 5 years. We have teams that aren't meeting our rules and regulations for our league. You know, we put them under review, and we've had teams that've been released because they haven't been able to meet our requirements.
So even not necessarily leagues that are folding or anything like that, but have you been contacted with teams in existing leagues that maybe from the outside we see a league that's doing just fine, but you are getting calls from teams or owners going, look, this isn't all what people think, and we want to get out of here?
Yeah, yes, sir. I sure have.
As far as kind of growth goes, is any part of that your when you look at how far out the league should expand, is any of that how much it costs to travel? How much does that play in?
That's one thing that comes into a big time play for me, because what we do is that, you know, one thing that I do know would be like the ABA and some not just them, I don't want to be calling them out, but a lot of the teams, if you look at like just the structure of the teams, they're all over the place. You've got teams that'll be in South Carolina, you might have one that's in New York, one that's in Tennessee, one that's in Texas, one that's in California. I mean, how can you really do all those games and schedule them? So what we do, we're broken up into the Northern Conference and the Southern Conference, and then what we have is this year we have one non-conference game. Like, we'll play one team from the North and one team from the North play one from the South, and we did the schedule like that, but we have a 13-game conference schedule. So we end up having 14 games this season. But like, the furthest that my team goes, we're in Fort Mill, South Carolina, and we go to Atlanta, which is a three-hour drive. And pretty much the way we have everything scheduled is you might have one overnight travel for the year. And, you know, and usually if you look like you're going to have an overnight travel, I might send the team from Charlotte to Virginia on Saturday and then to the other team on Virginia on Sunday. That when they come home, it's just one trip that they have going up there. And, you know, we make sure when I'm doing the scheduling, when I do the schedule, I don't do the schedule and put it out there and say, hey, this is your schedule, this is what you've got to do. I get approval from all 19 teams before we release the schedule and before they put it on US Basket and before I put it on our website. Because we want to try to make it as easy as we can possibly for the traveler. Because, I mean, that is important. Because the last thing you want is a team that's not coming to a game because they can't financially make it because they've been traveling so much on three or four games. And a lot of times, you know, It is a numbers crunch. You know, just because the team has a minor league name on it or a semi-pro team name on it, it doesn't mean that these guys got a lot of money that they can run around and play and travel all over, because they really can't.
What kind of commitment is it for a player to be playing in that league as far as can they leave, when are they allowed to leave, all that kind of stuff?
Well, that's one thing, too, that we've changed. I know in some of the leagues that we play in, it's more or less with – you have an open roster. You can have a different team every week. You never know who's going to be on the team. You can have up to 50 players play on one team. And I've watched games and leagues, and I follow leagues, and I've seen some where that's happened. And in our league, if you're a player and an owner, when we turn in our roster, the Wednesday night before your home game, your first game, your league roster is frozen. It's 16 players. And then over the course of when we start, which is normally March 1st until the first week of June, when that season runs through there, you get four roster ads the whole year, and that's all you get. So you've got to really know what you're doing when you're putting your roster together. And that way, you have your 16-man roster, you can have four add-ons, but each player that you add, you have to drop. Your roster can never be more than 16. And then we also add in an injury replacement. But if you have an injury replacement, we have to have like a doctor's excuse or something like that to know that he really is injured. And then you can add a player in his place onto your roster. But we added that in this year because we've had teams that took advantage of that. You know, this guy's hurt or this and that one. Really, they're not. They're just not available to play that week, and you're trying to act like they're hurt so you can put other players in there. And, you know, those are loopholes that, you know, teams find in every minor league you play in. If there's a loophole in the rules, they'll try to find a way to use them. So we try to find a way to tighten up on that every single year, and we've done that. There's always been something we've had to change every single year to make sure that we can keep teams from taking advantage of that.
For players that might want to, you know, go somewhere and play until they get noticed to get an offer maybe overseas somewhere, is that something that would be welcome in your league, or maybe not so much because it might push for players to leave often?
It's welcomed in our league because, honestly, that's what a lot of our teams do. Because if you got a 16-man roster, I mean, realistically, I mean, I'm not going to suit up 16 players for a game. I have nine players normally that I'll typically set up to play. And then I'll have maybe two or three guys that I know that are local. If I need somebody, in case somebody's not going to be there, I can call. And then I've got another four players on the roster to get 16 that are my guys that are playing pro ball overseas. Like this year, we have our typical four guys that are playing ball overseas. But then the guys that we were looking to add to our roster this year, I've had three of those guys that got jobs overseas that we don't have now. So, I mean, if a guy gets a job overseas, I mean, that's part of it. But we definitely want to see that because, I mean, that looks good for our league. When you have players that are playing in our league and then they get pro jobs overseas and they go play, because the thing is, by the time they go overseas, there's still enough time for them to get back to play, because usually, typically, most pro players are back home in the middle of May or the 1st of May or late April, so they can't finish out our season with our season running to the last weekend of May.
Finally, then, when you guys are playing games, about how many people, if you had to average, for you guys at least, do you think would be at a home game?
It varies. I mean, it depends on where you're going. Like, if you go to a lower tier team that doesn't do a great job on the production, or a new team that's just starting off, I mean, you might go, I mean, I'm not going to lie, you can go to a gym and there'll be more people on the benches and the staff than there will be in the crowd. You know, what I try to do is that, what I'll do is, like, I'll tie in with a church, or I've got an outreach program that is my cheer team that's with us, and they bring a bunch of people from the church, and then you will add in some type of activity or something for each game to try to get as many as we can. I mean, I would say that, you know, the smallest amount I would have at a game would be 100, but I mean, we've had before where we've had up to 500 people at the game before.
Wow. And then how do you compare on average to the rest of the teams in the league?
I'm probably the top tier. I would think out of the 19 okay. teams, I'm probably the top four.
Okay. Anything you think we need to know that we didn't talk about the league or your team?
The biggest misconception, I probably think the misconception about the getting paid, because, I mean, I do know that, like, I deal with emails all the time where I'll have a player that'll call me and say, hey, Chris, you know, I'm interested in playing in the league. What does it pay? And then I'm like, well, where have you played and got paid before? Paid nobody. And more often than not, they haven't played anywhere and got paid. You know, and see, what our league is, I mean, if we don't want to be a league that's going to come in, like a lot of these ones, they'll sign contracts and they'll get guys to, we're going to pay you this, we're going to pay you that. And then what happens is they don't meet that obligation of making that pay. And then we don't pay that. And I don't ever want to have somebody on the outside saying, oh, I played in the ECBL and they're supposed to pay me $400 a week. Sure. And then they didn't pay me nothing. And I hear that in every single league all over, even some of the best leagues that are run, and they're saying they're getting contracts. These players aren't getting paid. And so I don't ever want to put any of my owners or the teams in my league in that position to where, you know, we're getting a bad rep for not paying players. So the biggest thing is that I put everything into place that I can to try to elevate these players to where they're getting noticed. I mean, we have an end of the season awards where, you know, the owners in our league, we vote and we give like out 20 something awards. And then we also have the top 10 players award that we give out. Then U.S. Basket recognizes us. And I mean, that's the biggest database in the world of professional basketball. And we're recognized on there, and they put all of our games on there, all the updates we send in, you know, our stats up there. They put our standings in there. And then what they do at the end of the year, they do our first team, second team, third team, honorable mention, and then the top players at each position. They do that for us. And I mean, we have a live stream deal with Netcat Sports Network. They come in and do our 10-game season for us. Then they do our doubleheader championship, North and Southern Conference doubleheader championship that we do. They do our all-star game, and they also do our ECBL championship. And you can check any of that out on East Coast Basketball League, or you can Google any of our teams, and you'll see tons of videos all over the place, or Netcat Sports Network, which is, I mean, they do an outstanding job for us. We do our all-star game, which is a weekend event. All the players keep their all-star uniform. We have slam dunk contests, three-point contests. I mean, it's really great. And I would have never thought when I started this that, you know, it would get to where it is now, because when I was in the Tobacco Road League, one of the problems there, they didn't want to have an all-star game and they didn't want to live stream games, which I understood, because not live streaming games, you don't want to live stream some bad production. You know, and you look at it and they're like, man, this is crap.
But interesting.
Fortunately, the people that we signed up with, Chris Sheeman is who we did it our first 3 years, and then Netcast our last 2 years, they're so professional and so good, they're hiding some of the stuff that might not be, you know, what I want it to be or on the level I'd like it to be. But, you know, you can't really tell it, because these guys are working hard to make sure that they're selling our product too, because they're selling theirs by, you know, doing our game.
Thank you, Chris, very much for your time. We enjoyed it, and good luck out there.
Yeah, if you need me for anything else, call me anytime.
All right. See ya.
All right, buddy. Thanks, Aaron.
That was our interview with Chris Thomas, owner and founder of the East Coast Basketball League. The East Coast Basketball League, again, a basketball league on the East Coast of the United States, spanning from Virginia through North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia, is exactly that, a basketball league. I love that Chris described it as, he used the words, minor league because he wouldn't want to use an amateur doctor, so he doesn't want to have amateur players. I think there is some distinction that's needed. I have used in the past on this show, we've used amateur when talking about leagues that do not pay their players, and then semi-pro when some players are paid or some teams actually pay, and then professional when across the board players and teams are paying, or across the board players are getting paid from either their teams or maybe the league itself. So in this case, yes, I understand Chris doesn't like the term amateur, and I respect that answer, but for our definition and our sake, the East Coast Basketball League would be considered amateur, not because of the talent, again, not saying that all the players are just this low-level basketball player, but instead because they're not getting paid. At least it's not a promise for the league that the league's going to pay you. He said there might be a stipend for ticket sales by the team. That with our definition we've been using, would not count. So we're going to consider this still amateur-based, at least when it comes to pay. Talent, that's up to you. You know, we've had leagues that describe their own talent, and that's really up to them, and it's then up to you guys, the viewers, to decide if it's accurate. We've said time and time again, the basketball league considers themselves the third highest in the United States. Obviously, the NBA first, followed up by their little brother, the G League. And then they're claiming that third spot when it comes to talent. And so, again, that's up to you guys to decide and validate. Do you agree with that or not? Where would you put the East Coast Basketball League? Where would you put... Now, the ABA as a whole is pretty difficult because it spans across the whole country and half the teams don't play each other, far more than half the teams don't play each other. And so it's kind of its own thing, which makes it difficult to judge. But really, you have to look and decide, where does this talent fit? Now, when you get things like this or leagues like this, leagues that don't necessarily pay, and also have to be very careful about how far they span out geographically because of travel costs, you're also looking at not necessarily getting an opportunity to, you know, if you live in Ohio, you are probably not going to get an option to go play in the East Coast Basketball League. However, you might be able to find yourself in the Ohio Valley Basketball League. You're going to get a lot of options, but when you're looking at not getting paid, which is totally fine, different scenarios. When you're looking at not getting paid, you need to look at what is the value of you playing in that league. Well, you are playing for exposure. You're playing to keep in shape. You're playing for opportunities that will come out of that. If your league option can give you that, you now have to compare it. Well, what's giving me more? So let's say, for example, you live in North Carolina inside this East Coast Basketball League span. Well, there's ABA teams in North Carolina. So you're going to play for an ABA team, you're going to play for an East Coast Basketball League team. Okay? Well, how are you going to decide? They're both not going to pay you. Again, there might be a stipend, whatever. Let's say all things being equal, they're not going to pay you. Okay? But your most important thing is that you are playing basketball to continue to play basketball. So you need film, you need to stay in shape, and you need stats. Whoever can give you that the best, that's who you need to work with. Because whoever can give you the best film, whoever can give you the most accurate, up-to-date, easy-to-access stats, and keep you in the best shape, whoever can do that is going to do a far better job at being able to get you to another opportunity around the world. So I mention that because sometimes we gloss over some of these leagues and think, oh, they're not gonna pay you, at least nothing more than a stipend for ticket sales. That they're still very important to look into, because if you're gonna play and you want this to be your life, you need to start somewhere. You need to be playing somewhere. During the in-between time, you need to be playing. You need to be staying fit. We've talked about with agents in the past, and David Magley has said before that one of the worst things you can have is a gap year in your resume. you shouldn't have time. If this is going to be your life, if this is what you're dedicated to, you can't have time off. And so you might need to find some of these leagues to fill some of your time. And you need to be careful because some of these leagues overlap in space. And so now you need to know what you're looking for. You need to look for who's going to give you the best film, who's going to give you the best stats, who's going to keep you the best in shape, who's going to keep you what you need to be able to go out and continue to play. So don't overlook these leagues. These interviews with leagues like this are very, very, very important because this fills your time. Very important time. Because if this time is not filled by basketball, at least a lot of it is not filled with basketball, you're going to find it a lot difficult to continue your career and your life overseas or somewhere else playing basketball and getting paid and making it a living. So that being said, I hope you enjoyed our interview with Chris Thomas. I appreciate you listening once again, and you'll hear back from us in a week. Thank you. Thank you all for making it through another episode. A couple things I got a quick run through and then we'll be done. First, if you haven't already, go ahead and follow us on our different key platforms. First, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/globallyballin. Also, Instagram at globallyballinofficial, and then Twitter at globallyballin. The Instagram and Twitter are by far our most active, and they're also very different content. They're actually run by different people. So go ahead and make sure you're following both of those, and they'll also both alert you for when something new is posted either in the podcast or Patreon, which I'm going to talk about in just a second. Also, when it comes to the Facebook account seems less active, and we're aware of that. It's different kind of content and more is coming to the Facebook page, so you'll want to like it to make sure you're ready when a new wave of different content, which is coming soon, starts to make its way on there, which is exciting. Finally, though, is the Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com and then you search Globally Ballin, you're going to find our account. $3 a month, and with that, you're going to get a couple of things. First, shout out to all the supporters, which is great, which is actually also really good for any of you athletes out there. It's a great way to get your name, your brand, your place where people can find your highlight tapes, all that stuff. That'll be plugged in our episodes, which is great. So if you become a patron for the $3 a month, you'll get that. In addition, though, what we're really kind of excited about, not that we're not excited about the other one, is that you're going to get a bunch of extra content. It's going to be different from when I originally recorded this to when you're listening to this now. We're going to keep adding to it. There's a lot of different stuff. It might just be extra stuff that didn't fit into an episode. And there's also a whole new, different kind of content called Candid Conversations, which is basically a whole new show that we started. As the name suggests, it's a conversation between me and somebody else. For whatever reason, it doesn't fit into an episode. And if you go check out one of those Candid Conversations, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So that $3 a month, you're going to get your shout out and your help to support your brand or get attention to your highlight reel or whatever, plus a lot of extra detailed, fun content in addition to this free podcast. So go and check that out. Refresher, find us on Facebook, facebook.com/globallyballin, Instagram at globallyballinofficial, Twitter at globallyballin, and Patreon, patreon.com, search Globally Ballin, and you'll find, do the $3 a month patron if you're interested, and get all new content, a bunch of additional content. If that's not for you, totally fine. We still really appreciate you supporting and listening. If you have any suggestions, make sure you send us a message. Again, because we're most active on Instagram and Twitter, that's the best way to send us a suggestion. We'd be happy to listen and try to get anybody in that area and that sport, that country, that topic that'll help you best. So make sure you send us one of those requests. Otherwise, thank you again for listening. You'll hear from us again next week.